Imagine that you're standing in the middle of a road in the flattest part of North Dakota. On a moonless night, no stars, not a breath of wind. Imagine you light a candle and you place it down beside you. You set it there on the ground in its little stand. And then you walk off into the darkness. Every so often you turn around and you can still see the candle burning. If conditions of the air were ideal in that place at that time, you could walk for 17 miles and still look back and see that one little flame. Somewhere between miles 17 and 18, you would lose sight of the light. So if you walked backward that distance, you could know the exact moment it happened, the exact step at which the flame seemed to go out. But you would know that all you had to do to find it again was to take one single step forward, to go from darkness back to light. What is that place called? The poet L. Zolnius asks. And then he answers, "Don't tell me about photons and eyeballs and reflection and refraction, or the speed of light being 186,000 miles per second and relativity. All I know," he says, "is that that place where the light disappears and appears, that is where we live. Here we stand at the edge of Holy Week, and as we look over the days to come, we are definitely right on that line. We are going to see the whole range of human goodness and human flaws, the light and how close it comes to being swallowed by darkness, hope and how precarious hope is. This Mass is kind of jarring, really. It's a study in contrast, because we begin with the palms, this celebratory procession full of cheering and light, and then we dive right into the Passion, very somber and dark. And this is an overture to the whole week. Holy Week is going to take us through this whole range. So it's a way of getting in touch with what it means to be a human, and the best and worst that we're capable of, all of us. It was good to see so many of you at the rally in Cobbs Hill Park a week ago Saturday. Lots of spiritist people. I was very, very proud. Yeah, clap for yourselves, you guys. Give yourselves a hand. Really brought Palm Sunday alive for me this year. On that day long ago, a ragtag bunch of people, a huge crowd again, gathered with Jesus, gathered to stage a peace demonstration as a counter to Roman military exercises that were happening in the capital at the same time. Rome's parade was a display of authoritarian power, from a regime that had routinely disenfranchised the poor, had exploited people economically, had placed heavy burdens on the most vulnerable. So that parade was meant as a display of the might of the regime. So picture it bristling with weapons and vehicles of war. Picture it gleaming with gold. Today, we see on parade decisions to cut funding to schools and universities and health research, to organizations that protect our oceans, to sources of health care for the poor. We see those who protest being disappeared, something many of us thought could never happen in the United States. We see foreign-born people being disappeared, and the attempt to erase some people from ever having lived. Erase women, gay and trans people, people of color, from the records of both the present and the past. We see cuts to U.S. aid, placing a huge burden on the backs of some of the poorest people in the world, and economic games that line the pockets of the wealthiest, while everyone else struggles more and more to pay for the basics they need. And so, just as on the first Palm Sunday, last week, people turned out to say with their presence that they didn't plan to just accept this. They showed up peacefully to say, "We see what's going on, and we demand a different way. In the days since the rally, the thing I've found myself thinking about the most was how Jesus' crowd was a hodgepodge. In that great swell of people were all the usual suspects with whom Jesus had spent his whole ministry, all the people he had chosen to hang out with, which is to say, everybody. Everybody was there. Poor people and rich people, like Zacchaeus and Joseph of Arimathea, who was mentioned in the gospel, and the women who sponsored the 12. Religious people, like some of the Pharisees, and people the religious do-gooders would have been scandalized by, like tax collectors, sinners, women with a past, like the woman who washed Jesus' feet, and the Samaritan woman at the well. There were lots of workers, fishermen, farmers, merchants, craftsmen. There were former opponents of Jesus, perhaps some Syrophoenicians, and maybe even a conscientious objector, Roman soldier or two, like the centurion. There were old people, children, widows. There were semi-monks, like the followers of John the Baptist, and many serious foodies and partiers as well. There were people from opposing cultures and worldviews, revolutionaries, radicals like Simon the Zealot, and people who until very recently had led a conventional life enmeshed with the current broken system, like Matthew the tax collector. The people who gathered for that demonstration didn't agree on everything, didn't agree on much, probably. But they all knew that the current state of things wasn't okay, and the need for change brought them all together. So I am hoping for that hodgepodge. I am praying for something more and more like that. We don't have to hold all the same beliefs to get together on this one, to know that there has to be an alternative to the kind of rule we're seeing these days. This week, someone in our parish, a young person, said to me, "I run in a lot of progressive circles, a lot of activist circles. I find that people are always anxious to give me a list of actions I can take. They always have like a list of 10 ready. What I'm really looking for, though," she said, "isn't really just how to do more. Many of us are already doing a lot." She said, "I'm wondering how to show up in a world like this with an open heart. I'm wondering how to show up in a way that's loving and peaceful, in the way that Jesus would have." So even as we pray for Jesus the agitator, Jesus the protester, to interrupt our daily life as he did in Jerusalem, to disrupt our complacency as he did theirs, this is a really good question: how to follow him as loving challengers, peaceful challengers to the status quo. And one theme that we'll see come out this week is the best and the worst that people are capable of, and as our reading of that passion script is meant to show us, the world doesn't break down neatly into good people and bad people. The line between the noblest impulses and our worst runs through each of us, runs through every human heart. Jesus embraced both the people standing with him and people who opposed him, and he understood. He had a long understanding going way back in the Gospels that some people would be in one of those groups in the morning and the other group by the afternoon. Within each of us is that ability to push back against God and against the best in ourselves. But Jesus embraced people at their best and their worst. He didn't love anyone more or less than anyone else. The second reading today, many of you have told me that this is a favorite of yours. That is a very old Christian hymn. It's older than the rest of the scriptures that it's surrounded by. It's a beautiful meditation on Jesus' humility, how he emptied himself of his ego and opened his arms to everyone, no exceptions. So what a beautiful text for us to meditate on in a time like this, so that we can seek ourselves that same self-emptying, pouring out our ego, and remembering that all-important task of not confusing ourselves with God, to take the form of a servant, just as he did. This is not only the tonic against becoming oppressors ourselves, it's also a way of keeping our hearts soft and tender and open to everyone, not only people at their best, but people at their worst. The year we graduated, one of my college friends went to work in a home for people with very severe behavioral and emotional challenges. And he told me about his training ahead of getting hired. One of the things he had to show that he had mastered before coming on board, he told me, was a certain hold that he had to know by heart. And this was both for people who were upset, who might be crying, and for people who were in a rage, who were becoming violent. In both cases, he had to learn a way of wrapping his arms around the person. It looked exactly like a hug, but it was a magical kind. Just the right amount of pressure to be both gentle and firm, to contain if somebody was lashing out and maybe gonna harm themselves or others, and to comfort so they would start to calm down. And over the years, he knew he would meet many people on their worst day, some of them distraught, some of them angry. His job was to surround them with that embrace, and being held, the bad stretch would pass, and they would come back to themselves little by little. This is also what contemplation is. We let God wrap God's arms around us, no matter what kind of day we're having, no matter if we're going to pieces, falling apart, and know that God is also holding everybody else, even those we're tempted to condemn. God doesn't love any one of them one jot less than us, or one jot less than the greatest saint who ever lived. We are all gathered in that loving embrace. And as we place ourselves in that awareness, the next part of contemplation is we just make ourselves available for whatever God might need from us. That first gospel passage is filled with examples of people being responsive to God. The whole Palm Sunday procession wouldn't have happened without person after person finding the good in themselves and doing what Jesus asked. They placed cloaks to smooth his path. They waved palms. They raised their chant, beseeching for God to save us. A donkey would have been used for a lot of tasks necessary for daily life, so probably it would have been hard to part with, kind of like giving up your car. And yet, there were no questions asked. Its owner heard the Lord needs it, and that was that. This anonymous person, whoever they were, knew their life was about something greater than themselves, that they were part of a much bigger story. And so they offered their small contribution to the subversive work God was up to. And by the way, at each of our masses now, there's been a mistake, quote unquote, there's been a line written for Jesus in the play that you guys have spoken. And I think that's by the hand of the Spirit, because Christ is a part of us also. So I think that was a divine intervention there. We're capable of very good things. The crowd that has stayed with me the most this week isn't the one from Cobbs Hill, isn't the one from New York, isn't the one from Washington. I'm thinking about a little town in the North Country called Sackett's Harbor. A family that had worked in that community for 15 years and lived there was swept up in an ICE raid and taken to a detention center in Texas. The youngest in the family was a third grader. Nobody had been accused of a crime. The townspeople of Sackett's Harbor searched, trying to find where this family, who they'd known and loved, had gone. And finally, word came when one of the kids, given a call to make out of the detention center, called her favorite teacher at the school back home. The students, the teachers, the local officials, the whole town came out demanding that their neighbors be returned to them. And after 11 days, their outcry was successful. This family came home to avalanches of cards, welcome signs everywhere. Sackett's Harbor is one of the most Republican districts in New York State. The head of ICE is from an adjacent town. It is a rural community that feels, in the words of one person who lives there, like a time travel trip back 50 or 100 years ago. Because of that, she added, because everybody still knows everybody, when this family was taken, it didn't feel like an other. It felt like our children who were being whisked away. We wanted our kids back. At the mass protests for the family, only one lone heckler was heard. He wasn't arrested, he wasn't argued with, he wasn't yelled at, but the crowd, led by several grandmothers, quietly encircled him in something that sounds like a huge embrace. It muffled the sound of his yelling. At one point, when he flung a particularly wild insult, the people just spontaneously burst out in laughter. I get goosebumps thinking about it, one attendee said. There's nothing like laughing in the face of hatred. So ride on, King Jesus. Lead us to the joy that is stronger than hate.